both for all the logistics, the back and forth and everything, and then also for having me. And thank you to all of you for... Wow! Like, amazing Rosh Chodesh Ruah. This doesn't... You know, I'm very, very happy teaching at the Masivta. Suffice it to say that when we get together for Rosh Chodesh, whatever, it doesn't sound exactly like that. There isn't the same degree of enthusiasm and energy in the room exactly. Boys get a little more ho-hum about school spirit. So this was great, and it's contagious. And thanks for setting the tone properly here on Rosh Chodesh Adar. So good Chodesh to everybody. I want to begin with a story, or at least half a story. I'm going to share the first half of the story, and really to understand the second half of the story and to properly frame the second half of the story, we're going to have to learn a little bit together. And it's a story about the Apterav. The Apterav, Rav Avram Yoshua Heschel, one of the great and early Hasidish Rebbes, also known as the Ohev Yisrael, and was really known as the Apterav because he served as the Rebbe in the small town in Poland called Apta, but also served in other positions as well. And specifically, he actually moved from Apta in 1808 to another community, a very large city actually, in Romania, called Yasi. And he became not the Yasi Rav, maybe because it's more difficult to say and pronounce and certainly to spell. There's a J in there, it gets complicated, so they just referred to him as the After Rav. But nevertheless, he took up this position in 1808. His first Purim, he received gifts. He received the standard, requisite, welcome to town, Shalach Manos from the Hasidim who lived in this community. But inside many of the Shalach Manos, specifically, as a gift that was given again and again and again, were gold coins. It was very flattering, and this was a means of showing proper honor and respect to the new Rebbe, who is now coming into the community, coming into the city. And the way that he reacted was bizarre. Not by our measure, not by our standard, but it was bizarre by the standard and the measure of his usual behavior and usual activity, his usual reaction when encountering money. Because every time he picked up one of these gold coins, he did like a little jig around the room. He did like a little rikud, and he was dancing, and he was besimcha, and it was also Purim, so fine. That much wasn't out of the ordinary. But still, to dance every time you pick up a gold coin, and specifically his son asked him about it. He's like, Ta, what's the story? You know, ordinarily, this is not the way you live your life. Usually, you live your life in the exact opposite manner, that you shun not only honors, but you shun riches, and you shun wealth. And how many times, as your son, have I heard about, not to become too engrossed in Olam Hazeh, and not to become too infatuated with issues of this world and the finitude of this world and material experiences in this world. Here, every time you pick up a gold coin, like, is that what this move was about? That taking on this new Rabbanus, taking on this new position was about increased wealth? It's so out of character. What's the story? To appreciate the answer, I want to learn a little bit together. And let's talk a little bit more about Purim and the real kishkas of Purim, beyond just this one Hasidish story, and we'll come back to it. First and foremost, I want to share a really, really interesting medrash. Interesting medrash at the beginning of Medrash Rabban Bereshis, really Bereshis Rabbah. The medrash speaks about an association between five different personalities, five different giants of Tanakh, and an important association that they have. Medrash tells us, Rabbi Levi Amar Kol Misha Ne'amar Bo Haya Ra'a Olam Chadash, that there are five people about whom it is said Haya, five people about whom the word Haya, it was, is used, and all five of these people were Ra'a Olam Chadash, they saw a new world. Who are the five? So Rabbi Shmuel goes on to count the Chamisha, Chamisha Heim, Noach. Noach is obvious. Noach certainly saw a new world. He saw the previous world completely decimated, completely destroyed, inundated with water, and a brand new world crops up in its place. Yosef HaTzadik goes from being a slave to being somebody of great import and great measure in Egyptian societies. The viceroy. Olam Chadash, brand new world. Moshe Rabbeinu sees the slavery and the servitude of the Jewish people, hard oppression for 210 years. And the next thing you know, he's crossed, he's on the other side of the Yam Suf, and he sees all the Egyptians inundated with water. Iyov, Eov had an extraordinarily tough life, nisyonos after nisyonos upon nisyonos upon nisyonos, tragedy after tragedy, catastrophic, until finally things come to resolution, and he's able to enjoy a fair measure of tranquility again in this world. And the final turnaround hopefully comes as no surprise, both because I'm here and we're celebrating today for a reason, but also I think that when we use the term turnaround, and you said associate turnaround with one book of Tanakh, we would immediately think of Megillas Esther. It's a turnaround. It's the greatest turnaround. When all hope was completely dashed, and the next thing you know, the Jews are on top of the world. And specifically with respect to Mordechai. Ish Yehudi Haya. There's that word, Haya. So the Haya refers to Mordechai. Mordechai is number 5 on the list. Mordechai is another person who experienced this great turnaround, who saw Olam Chadash, who saw this brand new world, that the Jewish people were going to be completely annihilated by Haman and his merry men. And the next thing you know, Mordechai is now the viceroy to the king. Mordechai takes the place of Haman, and Haman hangs on the gallows that he himself had prepared for Mordechai. So it's a remarkable turnaround. And all 5 have had a remarkable turnaround. I want to know about the word Haya. Because if we could think of the least impactful, the least impressive, the most anticlimactic word you could possibly use to connect the dots between 5 important biblical personalities, I think Haya would rise very, very quickly to the top of the list. Haya? It was Shkayach. Haya? It was. It was connects all 5. It was connects these 5 personalities. What is the association between Mordechai and Yosef and Moshe and Eov and Noach? Haya, it was. What is so very remarkable about the word Haya, such that we create this association and we speak so positively and so impactfully about these five people, these 5 giants, witness this complete turnaround? So to understand Mordechai, let's try to understand Esther. Esther, of course, not her real name. Not her real name. Real name is Hadassah. Real name is Hadassah. The Megillah itself tells us that. And she's referred to as Esther. Why is she called Esther? So we usually make the association of Esther being concealed. Astir, concealed, and that's the entire book. And it's all about the hidden presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's not Gilui Shechina, but it's Hester Panim. And even so, when there's Hester Panim, sometimes Hashem peeks through the cracks anyway. Another answer is given in the Gemara and Megillah. Gemara and Megillah, Daf Yud Gimel Amud Aleph. Rabbi Nechemya Omer Hadassah Shema. Sure, her name was Hadassah, v'lama nikris Esther. Why is it that she was called Esther? Shahi umos ha'olam korin osa al shum astahar. She was called Esther because Esther is related to the word astahar, which Rashi says, this is actually Aramaic, for yareach. For yareach. Anybody ever hear this before? Esther is called Esther because Esther, linguistically, etymologically, is related to the Aramaic word for moon. What's so special about the moon? Rashi says, Yafa Kalavana. She was as beautiful as the moon. She was as precious as the moon. She was as wonderful as the moon. So what's the story with the moon? As Jews, we're obsessed with the moon. Think about what today is. Rosh Chodesh. Oh, it's Rosh Chodesh, right? It's the beginning of the month. The term Chodesh can even refer directly to the moon because that's exactly how we calculate. That's exactly how we calibrate the calendar. How do we know? How do we know when the next month is going to start? It's based on the moon. Once upon a time, there would actually be this process of Kiddush HaChodesh, which unfortunately we don't have now. Hopefully by next month we will. Ritz Hashem. Kiddush HaChodesh. It's the moon. It's the very first mitzvah of the entire Torah. HaChodesh Hazeh Lachem Rosh Chodeshim. That this should be the first month. This should be the first month. Rashi tells us on the spot that HaKadosh Baruch Hu pointed to the moon to tell Moshe Rabbeinu that when the moon looks just like this, it's the moon. First mitzvah of the entire Torah. The moon is going to determine how you celebrate and how you calculate when the months are going to fall, the Yomim Tovim within those months. Hugely important. We dance in front of the moon, Kiddush Levana. Jews are obsessed with the moon. If there is one feature of the moon, and particularly with respect to halacha, that is critical to understand, if we're going to have any sort of meaningful conversation about the moon, it is to understand that the moon functions and operates in phases. The moon changes. The moon that you see hanging in the sky one night is not going to be the same moon that you see hanging in the sky the next night, and will certainly not be the same moon that you see hanging in the sky just a week later. Over the course of just 15 days, it goes from being a brand new moon to being a complete full moon until it shrinks back to just a crescent, just a sliver all over again. It waxes, it wanes, it's full, and then it's not, and then it's full again. The moon operates in phases. The moon operates in cycles. And perhaps this really is the true beauty of Esther. And if we understand the beauty of Esther, maybe we'll also understand the meaning of Mordechai. Picture yourselves in their shoes. Imagine yourselves standing in the exact same place. It's so easy for us to keep that smile on our faces the entire time that we're listening to the Megillah or that we're reading the Megillah ourselves. Why? Because, spoiler alert, because we know what happens at the end. We know how the story pans out. So when we read, here comes Haman, and Haman's got this whole plan, and he's going to speak to Ahasuerus, and they're going to sign the document, and they're going to seal it with the signet of the king, like we giggle and we chuckle, and a smile creeps across our face because, ha 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 ha, we know how it's all going to end. But imagine really being in their shoes. Imagine really living through that period. Imagine really experiencing this in real time. How horrifying. How frightening. Your life has just been signed over. It's been signed over to somebody who has all of the power and all of the authority to actually make it so. You're living in a world where the population, the locals, are just chomping at the bit to make it so. Anti-Semitism is rampant, and somebody who is as dynamic and somebody who has the ear of the people like Haman does can easily just whip the masses into a frenzy, an anti-Semitic frenzy. It's all over. It's all going to end. So what are we going to do? So pitchforks? Pitchforks in hand. I mean, we're Jews. We're the people of, you know, we're like nerdy accountants. We don't exactly like go to war. We're a bunch of lawyers. What are we going to like talk our way out of this? No hope. Where do Mordechai and Esther find the hope? How do they regain the hope? How can they, in the depth of this mounting catastrophe, how do they have the fortitude to be able to look past? Life operates in phases. Life goes in phases. In Baruch Hashem, there was at least enough of a paper trail at that point in history to know that so often we have been down and out. So often we were right at the cusp of annihilation. So frequently, it was the next day we were going to be completely entrenched in Egyptian servitude and slavery, and the next day we were going to have all the children just thrown into the Nile, and the next day was going to be completely, just utter decimation. We were kicked out of the land, Beis HaMikdash is destroyed, and somehow or another, I don't know, we bounce back. The beauty of Esther is that she is the Sahara, is that she is the moon. Yafe ki yareach, yafe ki levana. Not just externally, not just in terms of appearance and in terms of looks, that whatever effect and infatuation we have when we look up at this beautiful, resplendent moon at night is the same reaction that we have when we look at the face of Esther. But that in character and quality, this is who she was. She was somebody who was capable of standing in a moment and recognizing that even though everything looks so bleak, everything looks so horrible, it's so horrific, there is no hope. I can see a shred of hope. And Mordechai reminds her. Mordechai reminds her that you have an opportunity to be the one. If you won't be the one, it's going to turn around anyway. Because Klal Yisrael, the Jewish people, we ourselves are like the moon. We operate in phases. We might be down and out. We might be downtrodden. We might be oppressed. We might have a bounty on our heads one day, but we'll never be completely lost. Because of Kadosh Baruch Hu has our backs. Maybe that's the word Hayah. As unremarkable as the word Hayah sounds at first blush, what does Hayah mean? What Hayah means is that I'm able to distance myself from whatever it was that happened just yesterday and realize that today can be totally different. Today can be replete with promise and with hope, and the future can be bright, even though yesterday was abysmal. Yesterday was a horrible day. Yesterday, Haman and Achashverosh, they signed this contract between them. Yesterday makes today look, on the face of it, on the surface of it, like it's going to be just as bleak, but maybe not. There can be great turnarounds. There can be great changes. There can be seismic shifts in the status of the Jewish people and the status of the individuals that make up the Jewish people, just like that, in the blink of an eye. Maybe that's the idea of Hayah. Maybe it's not just these are people who happened to find themselves at these unusual points of history in which there is this great turnaround. How did it happen? It just happened. Maybe these were people who were ready for it. Maybe these were people who were willing and courageous enough to actually hope that tomorrow was going to be better. That Geula was impending, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu could do anything, that he could change the outcome, that he could change the outlook of the Jewish people. Just like that. Why? Because these were people who were characterized by Hayah. I am not going to be dragged down by whatever yesterday was. Who cares about yesterday? Yesterday happened already. It doesn't have to define the future. It's over. I can pick myself up. I can dust myself off. And with all requisite hashkacha and with siyata d'shmaya, we can march to a far more promising and far more favorable future. But you have to allow yourself to be in that position in the first place. You have to look at life as Hayah. Whatever happened yesterday, happened yesterday. If Moshe Rabbeinu was the type of person who just saw what was, we're slaves. There's nothing else to talk about. Could he ever have become, even with all the motivation, even with all the prodding, could he ever have become the Moshe Rabbeinu that we know? The leader of the Jewish people, leaving them out of Mitzrayim? Would have given up before there was ever an opportunity. If Yosef HaTzadik wasn't the kind of person who could have looked at his entire past and say, So I've been a slave. So I tried once and it didn't go well, and I thought that things were finally starting to build and it was a complete disaster. Potiphar throws me in prison. And then I think that again I'm trying to rise up and I'm starting to see I'm wheeling and dealing and things are starting to go well, and then not, and then I'm just stuck here and I'm languishing here. But there could yet be a promising future. Yesterday, Hayah. Last week, Hayah. Last year, Hayah. What can be today could be extraordinary. If Mordechai wasn't the type of person who lived his life in that capacity, as Hayah, as Chazal are emphasizing and accentuating, then he never would have been the person to motivate Esther the way he did. He never would have been the person to seize the opportunities that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave him. And who knows? Maybe then the Purim story doesn't unfold the way that we all know that it actually does. We need to be of that mindset. We need to be of that mentality. And I would argue that we should not just be of that mindset and that mentality when it comes to the kinds of communal, global, national changes that can take place, not exactly in our own lives, but over the course of just a few generations, we have seen an extraordinary turnaround in the status of the Jewish people. We go from complete, almost near complete, utter annihilation of the Jewish people, 6 million neshamos lost, to look around the room. And this is a microcosm of what's going on throughout the expanses of Klal Yisrael. So yes, it's true on a national level. It's true on a communal level. It's true in terms of like big picture. That just because we seem down and out doesn't mean that we'll be that way forever. Just because the Jewish people are down and out doesn't mean we'll be that way forever. HaKadosh Baruch Hu can bring us out from the depths. But it's also true on a personal level. And let's remember that as much as Esther Hamalka is Esther Hamalka, as much as she is the queen, as much as she is a leader of the entire Jewish people, she's also an individual. And this is her name. This is who she is as a person. This is something that identifies her, who she is. She is Esther. She is Yaffa Kilavana. On a personal level, whatever was yesterday, whoever I was yesterday, I'm not going to allow it to bog me down, one way or the other. Esther could be the woman who sits crying in her room over her entire life destroyed, over her entire life lost. What she was in the home of Mordechai, building a nice bayis neman b'Yisrael, everything's calm, everything is serene. Okay, so no. So it's not Eretz Yisrael. But like, a better galus we've never had. We can do whatever we want. We're invited to the palace of the king. We can build a community the way that we want. We can send our children wherever we want. It's pretty sweet. It's pretty sweet. Esther gets up in the morning, and her husband is out to shul. And she davens, and he stays to learn. She sits down to learn. And everything is tranquil and beautiful and serene. And then a total turn. A personal turn. She's snatched out of all of that, out of her ideal life. And she's stuck in the palace, and try as she might, just sitting there with clenched fists saying, I'm not going to help this process one iota. Perfume? No. Makeup? No. Fancy clothes? No. She is committed to just returning back home, going back to Mordechai's home. And against all of her efforts, or her non-efforts, she's taken away anyway. She's taken away anyway, and she ends up as the queen. She could be sitting in her room crying, saying there's no hope, there's no use, there's no purpose, forget it, it's over, my life is over, I'm over, everything's over. And instead, she becomes the great heroine that we remember, Esther Hamalka. Esther Hamalka, an entire Sefer of Tanakh dedicated to her name, dedicated to her experiences, dedicated to her heroism, because she also, Haya, because it's Yafa Kalavana, it's how the moon goes. It changes and it turns, and I need not, and I cannot afford to define my experiences today by whatever yesterday may have looked like. On a personal level, if you're anything like me, we can get bogged down. We can get really bogged down. We all make mistakes. And we all experience failures. And we all have challenges. And we have bumps in the road. And there are hurdles. And sometimes we get over them, and sometimes it feels like we just don't. Are we brave enough to say that that was yesterday? But today can be something totally different. Yesterday I was defined by certain experiences. Yesterday I was defined by a certain personality. Do I really have to be the exact same person today? I'm not such a balas chesed. How do I know? Because I never have been. So what? So what? Haya. That's what was. Who's to say what today will be? I'm not such an academic, and I'm not so brainy, and it's just not for me. School's not my thing. It's just not my thing. How do you know? Well, because it never was. Yeah, but that's Haya. That was. Who's to say that today cannot be the start of a far more promising future? I'm not that outgoing, and I'm not that smart, and I'm not that bright, and I'm not that interesting, and I'm not that this, that, or the other thing. And we all feel that way sometimes. How much do we drag, do we schlep all of the mud and all of the murk from yesterday into today? And how brave are we in terms of the ability to just say, no, Haya, that was, but I can grow. I can develop. I can be something else. There's another dimension of the moon when we think about the moon's beauty. Is that the moon, of course, is a source of light. But I ask you, is the moon actually a source of light? Does the moon shine? The moon's a mirror. The moon doesn't shine at all. The moon reflects. The moon reflects. If we don't define ourselves purely by, this is what I am, this is my personality, and period, end of story, but rather, that I'm a person who can adapt. Depends on what's going on. It depends on what the situation calls for. It depends on what's needed. Doesn't matter whether I did or didn't rise to the challenges yesterday. Maybe today there are new challenges. Maybe I can become something so much more extraordinary, so much greater than however it is that I may have acted yesterday. But today I'm different because I reflect. I reflect the light. More than anything, I reflect the light of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I recognize that Hashem doesn't make mistakes. He puts me in the scenario and in the situation that I need to be in, perfectly calibrated just for who I am, just for what I need to be able to grow as a person. If I live with that sort of mentality, who cares what I was yesterday? Who cares how I acted yesterday? Who cares how I responded yesterday? Today can be different. Today it's a matter of catching the light, reflecting the light. I can be different today because I'm not defined by whatever it was that I was yesterday. I move in phases. I look at new challenges as new opportunities to be able to be something greater, to be able to do something more extraordinary. I don't have to be stuck and I don't have to be bound by whatever it was that existed yesterday. We know that we read the Megillah twice. We read the Megillah once at night, we read the Megillah again in the morning. The Gemara again in the Megillah quotes a very interesting pasuk to tell us that we do so. Adam Megillah b'layla v'lishnosa bayom. You have to read the Megillah both at night and then you read it again during the day. Why? What's the pasuk? Pasuk in Tehillim, Perek Chaf Beis, pasuk Gimel. Elokai ekra yomam. I call out to Hashem during the day, v'lo sa'aneh. But you, God, you don't answer. V'layla v'lo dumiyali. And at night, but there's no solace, there's no rest. I have no inner tranquil. If you could think of any pasuk that we'd point to less for the purpose of inspiring us to read a story about HaKadosh Baruch Hu's salvation, about how HaKadosh Baruch Hu spares and saves Klal Yisrael, I think it would be this one. Call out to Hashem and you don't save me? Call out to Hashem and you don't answer me? So I get it. So it happens twice. Talk about calling out to Hashem during the day, calling out to Hashem again at night. But we're speaking about Hashem doesn't save me. Because maybe that message really is deeply embedded in the Megillah. That the Megillah is the recognition that whatever may have happened yesterday, that yesterday I davened, I was hopeful, that I would be better, that I would do more, that I would have more success, I'd be more matzliach, and it doesn't happen. So what does today look like? The Megillah demands that what today needs to look like is that we daven again, we try harder, and we don't just define ourselves today by yesterday's mistakes, by yesterday's failures, by yesterday's foibles. Today we can be more. You keep going back and you daven again. When you're reflecting on HaKadosh Baruch Hu's light, then that light is infinite. And there are infinite chances for more, for better, for greater salvation, for more success, and for more promise. If we're willing to be characterized by Haya, to look at yesterday and say that's the past. But today I can be so much better than whatever mistakes I may have made just a short while ago. So let's come back. So let's come back to the Abd Rav. So what did the Abd Rav say to his son? Something that I think is simple, but insightful and really remarkable if you think about it. Why is it that I pick up these gold coins that are sent to me by the Hasidim? Yeah, you see me dancing around the living room. I don't usually act in this manner. Usually, get a bit of wealth and, this world, oh, mazeh, gashmi, it's materialism. Who needs it? It's nothing. It's garnished up. Today you're rejoicing. Ta, why are you rejoicing today? Because today is a day of matanos la'avyonim. Today is a day of tzedakah. I'm going to be giving tzedakah today. I'm going to be giving large sums, at least it's all relative, but large sums for the Abdur of himself to tzedakah. I want to be in position where I am giving away and providing something that I myself consider meaningful. If I look at the money today, if I look at the gold coins today, the same way that I looked at them yesterday, what am I giving away? I'm giving away, garnished, materialism, nothing, gashmias, this world, finitude, nothing. It's here today, gone tomorrow, can't take it with you. But if I rejoice, if I think about, no, money, oh, well, money can buy, it's so great, it's so wonderful, and then I give it away, then that's something extraordinary. So who is the Abdur of? Who was he? What was his relationship with money? What was his relationship with Gashmias? The answer is, it depends. It depends on what the situation called for. Whatever he was yesterday, whatever he felt yesterday, he knew that he could dig down, that he could concentrate, that he could meditate, and he could change it. He could change his perspective. He could change who he was. Because it's a new opportunity, it's a new scenario, and it may call for reflecting the light of HaKadosh Baruch Hu a little bit differently today than it was yesterday. I need not define myself by whatever it is that I thought yesterday, that I felt yesterday. Today is an opportunity anew to reflect the greatness, the glory, and the light of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and it may be very different from how it was yesterday. But if I'm the person who believes in Hayah, that my attitudes of yesterday, my deeds of yesterday, my misdeeds of yesterday don't need to define the kind of person I'm going to be today or tomorrow, then I can enjoy tremendous success in reflecting that light so beautifully. Mishenichnas Adar Marbin Besimcha. I think that there is no greater simcha than knowing that whatever we may have done previously, whoever we were, whatever mistakes we may have made. It's a long bell. And we all make them. We're human. Question is not have we made mistakes. The question is how much do we take those mistakes and do we schlep them into the present? Do we schlep them into the future? Do we continue to be bound by them? Mishenichnas Adar Marbin Besimcha. If we understand this core lesson of what the Megillah is, of who Esther was, of who Mordechai was, the ability to say Hayah, we become liberated, nationally, personally liberated, to enjoy the simcha, to enjoy the success of knowing that today and tomorrow can be so much sweeter, can be so much more successful, can be so much greater than whatever yesterday may have been. Thanks very much, guys. Thank you for listening. Have a good Chodesh.